Please stand by. Good day, everyone, and welcome, and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference. Planar migration is ZOS version 1.9. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a live question and answer session. In addition, today's conference is being recorded. Our speakers for today's teleconference are Geta Berg, IBM ZOS Marketing, and Marna Wally, IBM ZOS System Build and Install Team. At this time, I would like to hand it over to our first speaker, Geta Berg.
Welcome, folks, and hello. I am Geta Berg with ZOS Marketing, and thank you for attending our call today, and thank you for your interest in migrating to ZOS version 1, release 9. Let's jump to page 3. Our main speaker for today is Marna Wally from our IBM ZOS System Build and Install team, and she'll be providing an overview of ZOS version 1.9 migration considerations, and afterwards we'll have some time for a brief question and answer session. But first, I'd like to spend a few minutes to cover some of the features that are in ZOS. A lot of you are interested in this release of ZOS because you may be on ZOS version 1.7, and as you all know, that 1.7 goes out of service September of this year. But beyond that, ZOS 1.9 is a good release to go to for a number of reasons. First of all, ZOS 1.9 is, well, actually a really good release. I've heard some unofficial feedback from some of our early users, and some folks have reported that this release has IPL'd successfully on their first attempts, and customers have reported that there have been no outstanding problems or no showstoppers, and it has even been said that this has been the best release yet. All good news. Also, I'm sure many of you are aware of the new server we announced, IBM System Z10 Enterprise Class. And as always, with new hardware, we roll hardware functions back to certain supported releases of ZOS. But did you know that all of the hardware capabilities of the Z10 EC, yes, all, are supported with ZOS version 1.9? So if you like and want the new Z10 EC, then there's no waiting for ZOS 1.10 or worrying about any functionality that might be missed. Chart 4, the next chart, provides a summary of the capabilities that are supported with ZOS 1.9. In conjunction with the new Z10 EC server, we have many improvements in terms of scalability and performance. There's Hyper Dispatch, and that's intelligent dispatching of workloads for improved performance on the Z10 server. Also, ZOS 1.9 supports up to 1 terabyte of real memory per LPAR, as well as 1 megabyte pages, which are expected to reduce memory management overhead on the Z10 server. Also, 1.9 supports up to 64 processors per LPAR. I know for those of you who are aware of ZOS 1.9 that we announced that back in August of last year with up to 54-way support. Well, at that time, we didn't have any larger servers at that point, but rest assured, with the Z10, you have up to 64 processors per LPAR. With the Z10, of course, with 1.9, you have support for hardware decimal floating point, which can provide high-precision computing for your commercial workloads. And, of course, that's implemented on the hardware, not in millicode like the Z9 server. In terms of availability, of course, we improve parallel sysplex all the time. We have support for the new InfiniBand coupling links in the Z10 server, and many parallel sysplex enhancements, for example, improvements to coupled dataset I/O performance, sysplex failure manager for ZOS, RMF reporting of the coupling facility, as well as coupling facility management improvements. And previewed last month, also available with ZOS 1.9, is going to be basic HyperSwap. It's intended to be a new, low-cost, single-site, high-availability disk solution, high-availability disk that allows the configuration of disk replication services using an intuitive GUI from ZOS. I think ZOS and its ZOS communication server provide a lot of interesting capabilities in networking as well. And this is in the area of policy-based networking, which can help create a ZOS network that is responsive to your application needs. That is the ability to define policies in one place and apply them uniformly across the IT environment. With every release of ZOS, we also simplify it, and ZOS 1.9 is no exception. With the Z10 server, we provide support for the Capacity Provisioning Manager. With ZOS 1.9, we improve application development and system operations. With System Rex Facility, which gives you the ability to run Rex.exec in an authorized state, as well as Metal-C, which provides support for embedding high-level assembler code into C applications. We've also improved integration of XLC++ with IBM Rational Developer for System Z. 1.9 also provides improvements in terms of consoles processing with message flood automation. Of course, we've also improved data record collection and management because now SMF has the ability to be configured to use the system logger as opposed to system data sets. As always, we also try to strive to improve the economics of the platform. We support Java on the Zaps and DB2 data serving with on the Zips. Last year, we introduced Zip-assisted IPsec for network security. And earlier this year, in support on 1.9, we have additional ZOS XML system services exploitation for both Zap and Zip processors, as well as introduced new Zip-assisted Zglobal Mirror, possibly an attractive option for existing XRC customers. Well, I hope you find ZOS version 1.9 an attractive release to get to. And, well, let's help you get there. So with that, I'd like to hand the call over to Marna Wally. Marna?
Thanks, Gitta. So let's look at what it takes to plan for your migration to ZOS release 9. I'm on slide number 5 right now. First, we'll look at the withdrawn functions in ZOS and also release 8 and release 9 because I recognize that a lot of users are coming from ZOS release 7 to release 9. Then we'll look at the ordering and deliverables and then the very important coexistence fallback and migration policy, and this is of particular importance if you're coming from ZOS release 7. Then we'll talk about positioning on release 9, and then I'll be able to cover a couple of migration actions from selected elements during this fairly short call. So let's move right on to slide number 6. Slide number 6 is a list of all of the functions that we've withdrawn as of ZOS release 8. So if you're coming from ZOS release 7 to ZOS release 9, you haven't seen these removal yet, and you do need to accommodate them. First of all, I'd like to talk about the ZFS multi-file system aggregate when shared across a SysPlex. This is important because you won't be able to mount any ZFS multi-file system aggregates as of ZOS release 8. You'll need to convert them to compatibility mode aggregates, which is a direction that we're moving in general. But as of ZOS release 8, you will not be able to mount them in a shared file system environment. That's very important. Another one that I'd like to talk about is the remaining 1-byte console ID support that's been removed as of ZOS release 8, and that is very important to recognize that that happened in release 8. The little fire icon that you'll see on my foils are the ones that I think are of particular importance, and I don't want you to overlook. There have been a couple of functions removed from the communication server. AnyNet is one that some customers have been affected by. I also wanted to mention that Firewall Technologies has also been removed from communication server as of ZOS release 8. Moving on to slide number 7 now. These are the elements and functions that we've taken out of ZOS release 9. First of all, one of the most important ones, I think, is that the runtime support for applications that have used the C, C++, IBM Open Class libraries have been removed. This is a very important migration action. That's why the fire icon is very large on this one, because we have had several customers that have had problems with products and some of their own applications that have been using the IBM Open Class library for runtime support. You may recall that we removed the development application support previously. However, if you didn't recompile the applications, they would still run. However, on ZOS release 9, the runtime support now has been removed. There is an important tool that you can run right now that will tell you if you have any applications or program products that are using the IBM Open Class library runtime support, and you can find that in your handout. So it's important to look at that one. Another important item on this chart is that as of ZOS release 6, communication server had the ability to separate out the Telnet server from the TCP/IP stack. It came in ZOS release 6. Now in ZOS release 9, it's going to be required that you run those two functions separately. So if you have not separated out your Telnet functions from your TCP/IP stack and run your Telnet server separately, it is important that you do that prior to migration to ZOS release 9. Okay, let's move to slide number 8 now. These are the functions that we're planning to remove in ZOS release 10, and I always like to look at these in order to see where migration is going to go in the future, which is a good thing to do. First of all, you can see at the top of this chart that we'll be removing three things in ZOS release 10, and then for the release after release 10, which we could call release 11, these are the ones that we're going to be removing also from communication server. So these are important to look at now in order to plan for your subsequent migration after ZOS release 9. Okay, moving on to slide number 9. This is just a continuation of more functions that we're planning to withdraw in the future in release 10 and beyond. Some of the most important ones that I think you need to recognize are that the Integrated Security Services LDAP server, that's the old LDAP server, we're planning on not supporting that in the ZOS release after release 10. Now, we've been providing the IBM Tivoli Directory Server, or ITDS, available ever since ZOS release 8, and we've been shipping both the ITDS and also the old LDAP server for these releases now. But in the release after release 10, we're only going to be shipping the IBM Tivoli Directory Server. So now's the time to move from the old LDAP server to the new LDAP server. Another important item that I keep mentioning, because it is a very important one, is that support for vSAM datasets that have been defined with embed and replicate attributes in the future won't be supported. And this is very important to recognize now and plan for a time, if you had any affected datasets, that you could get them redefined. The key range attribute that we had announced was not going to be support, was removed from the statement of direction for removal. However, we do recommend that you not use key range also. And we'll get a little bit into more of that migration action later. Okay, so let's move to slide number 10. This is a chart that I like to use because it describes where we are in the ordering and the release cycle. Right now, we're right in the middle of ZOS release 9. It was orderable in server pack starting in September, and the server pack planned ordering is going to end in October of 2008. So if you do need ZOS release 9 in a server pack, please plan to order it prior to October of 2008. We still do have ZOS release 8 available on a system pack that will be orderable until July 21st, 2008. So if you do need to get to ZOS release 8, perhaps you're on ZOS release 6, you need to order that in a system pack, the feed deliverable, and you need to get that before July 21st, 2008. We have had two web deliverables that have been fairly popular. We had the system rec support, which, as Gitta had mentioned, was a function that was introduced in ZOS release 9, but we've also brought that function out and made it available on ZOS release 8 with a web deliverable starting in September 28, 2007. So that's available if you wanted to add that independently to your ZOS release 8 system. Also, starting on November 15th, we've made a new level of the cryptographic support available for ZOS release 7, 8, and 9, and that FMID is HCR7750. An important thing to note here is that in the ZOS version 1 release 9 product itself, it does not have that level of the cryptographic support. If you would like the HCR7750, which would be the latest and greatest cryptographic support, you need to add that separately yourself via the web deliverable. Okay? So let's move on to slide number 11. ZOS version 1 release 9 is program number 5694-ABLE-01. It's been that program number for all of our version 1, so it's been out there for quite a while now. Remember that you order all of the optional priced and unpriced features that you're using before. Especially important are the export controlled features for ZOS version 1 release 9, and here's the complete list. It's just two features, the ZOS security level 3 and also the communication server security level 3. It's very important that if you want the export-controlled features that you order both of those with your ZOS version 1 release 9 product. I'd mentioned previously that the level of crypto in ZOS release 9 is not the highest level as of November 15, 2007. So you may want to add that web deliverable to your ZOS system also. I would encourage you to order ZOS version 1 release 9 electronically, and in order to receive it electronically, you need to order it via Shop Z series. So that's an important consideration. People that have used the electronic deliverable for server pack have really liked it, and they really don't even want to go back to tapes anymore. It's been so popular. Let's move on to slide number 12. Talk a little bit about coexistence. This is very important, and it's really important because a lot of people are still on ZOS release 7, and as you can see from this picture, if you want coexistence support with ZOS release 7, you need to get to ZOS release 9, because we have merged the coexistence migration service and fallback policy, meaning that anything that is still service supported will be coexistence supported. So if you're on ZOS release 7, you need to get to ZOS release 9 for coexistence support, because it will not be planned coexistence supported with ZOS release 10. Okay. And moving forward, thinking of the next release, ZOS release 8, that will go to ZOS release 10 and so on. So you'll have three consecutive releases in the newer coexistence policy, which, by the way, is not so new. It's been available and changed ever since ZOS release 6. Moving to slide number 13. It is very important, Gitta had mentioned before, that ZOS release 7 is going to have service expiration on it on the 30th September of this year, so it's very important that if you are on 7, you start planning for your migration to ZOS Release 9. There is a handy website here where you can see all of the end-of-service dates for ZOS that have been announced. I bookmarked that website, and I think it's been very handy for knowing when things are going to go out of service. Okay, let's move on to slide number 14. The best thing you can do for positioning for ZOS Release 9 is to read the documentation first for ZOS Release 9. And as you hopefully know, the most important book for migration is the ZOS Migration Book, and that's where a lot of this presentation actually was pulled from, that very important book. So you'll want to look at the ZOS Release 9 Migration Book. You'll also want to look at the ZOS Release 9 Planning for Installation Book. And you'll want to look at the PSP buckets for the software and the hardware if you're going to be changing your hardware level. One of the most important things I'd like to bring to your attention now for ZOS Release 9 is some of the DASDE storage requirements. This is for the ZOS Release 9 product itself. It doesn't include other products. The target library size in 3390 cylinders for ZOS Release 9 is approximately 6,400 cylinders. And this is very closely approaching the limit for a 3390 Mod 6. And so I would recommend you to take a look at what kind of DASDE volumes you're using for your target libraries and take this into consideration. Now, the most important thing, and I should have put a larger fire item next to this one on slide number 14, is the file system. That's either the HFS or the ZFS for your version root file system for ZOS. That's approximately 2,900 cylinders. This is very much getting close to the limit of a 3390 Mod 3. A lot of people have put their file system on a 3390 Mod 3, and it's a single data set, and I would like to make sure that we're well positioned, and if you need to move to either a larger geometry size for your DASDE volume or you need to allocate a multi-volume data set for your file system, that you do plan for that now. So it's very important to look at your file system, where you have it laid out today, what kind of DASDE it's on, and if it's on a 3390 Mod 3, consider moving it to either a larger geometry or allocating a multi-volume data set for that file system. Okay, moving on to slide 15, we'll talk about the driving system if you're going to install server pack via a tape. It's not very exciting, the driving system requirements that you'll need to install ZOS Release 9, ZOS Release 7 with the APAR that you see on that foil is pretty much all you need. Everything else on this foil is the same as it's been for other releases, so nothing new there. However, I would want to bring your attention to the bullet on the bottom that talks about the minimum to service your new target system. We continue to see a couple of problems in this area because in order to use SMP to install service on your ZOS Release 9 system, you need to use the latest level of the program binder. That would be the ZOS Release 9 program binder to install ZOS Release 9 PTFs. You need to use the latest level of SMP, which would be SMP version 3 release 4. That's the level that shipped in ZOS Release 9. The latest level of the high-level assembler and the Unix system services requirement that you'll see above there. So I underlined and I put in bold the program binder because we've seen that some users have not been using the ZOS Release 9 program binder to install Release 9 PTFs, and it is very important that you do that. So don't overlook that. On slide number 16, I encourage you to use an electronic server pack, and there are additional driving system requirements if you're going to want to use an electronic delivery. They're specified at the last two bullets on this chart on slide 16. You'll need SMP version 3 release 3, which hopefully everyone's not at that lower level. Everyone probably has SMP version 3 release 4 nowadays. And you'll need either cryptographic services configured and active, but if you don't have that configured and active on your system, you can replace that requirement with the Java 2 Technology Edition version 1 release 4. So you need either the crypto or the Java Technology Edition in order to do integrity checking on the hash values in the electronic delivery format. Very important. So either one of those requirements is fine. SMP will prefer to use the cryptographic services options if it's there, but if it's not there, it will try to use Java. Okay. Moving on to slide number 17. A couple of the target system requirements for ZOS Release 9. I did want to point out that you need to look in the ZOS Version 1 Release 9 Planning for Installation Book for target system requirements. And the appendix where we had documented correct level of IBM products that will run with ZOS Release 9 looks a little different in Release 9, and I did want to point that out. Before, we used to list all of the IBM program products that would run with ZOS Release 9, and we had a couple of problems maintaining on that table, and a lot of times a lot of the entries in that table were just the minimum service supported levels. So we've taken a new approach to that appendix, and we're only documenting the exceptions for ZOS Release 9, If you're running with a program product that is service supported, that level of the product will be runnable with ZOS version 1 release 9, except for a very small table that you'll now find in that appendix, which are the exceptions to that statement. So what I would do is look in the ZOS release 9 appendix for just the exceptions, and if you're running supported levels of subsystems or other program products and they are still service supported, they will be fine with ZOS version 1 release 9. Okay, let's move on to slide number 18. I just pulled out a couple of the larger subsystems here and put them on the chart. KIX level 2.3 with PTF, DB2 version 7 is fine, IMS version 8 is fine, WebSphere application server version 5 release 1 is fine. One thing that is important to note is the last row on this table, Tivoli Omegamon XE. The minimum service supported is version 2. However, this is one of those exceptions, and it needs to be at least at version 3 or later with PTFs to run on ZOS release 9. So the last item, Tivoli Omegamon, that is one of the exceptions that you'll see in that new reworked appendix that you should take note of if you're running Tivoli Omegamon XE. Okay, moving on to slide number 19. Talk about coexistence system requirements. Probably the most important migration action you can do is to make sure that you have supported coexistence on your systems that you'll be sharing with ZOS Release 9. All of these are documented in the ZOS migration book, but I'll talk a second about how programmatic assistance is available to help you verify that you have all the correct and current coexistence on your existing system before you migrate to ZOS Release 9. So between 8 and 9, the list of elements that you see here are the ones that had new coexistence support, and you'll see those listed in your handout. Also, if you're coming from 7 to 9 in the appendix of your handout, you'll find the complete list of coexistence PTFs there. So let's move on to slide number 20. This is the programmatic help I was talking about. It's often difficult to know that you have the latest and greatest level of coexistence on your current system that you need to coexist with Release 9. So what we've done is this. We've had this existing tool called the EPSP tool, the EPSPT, and this tool uses these things called extract files that come from the PSP buckets, and it just does a comparison between what's in the PSP bucket and what's in your SMP CSI, and it tells you what's missing. So if you wanted to know you would offer coexistence, you would pull the extract file from the PSP bucket, and I'll tell you in a second which extract file to pull, and then you'd run the tool, compare it to your CSI, and you see what's missing, and if there's anything missing, you'd put it on. Now, the coexistence PTFs are all documented in the release bucket that you are coming from. So if you're coming from, for instance, ZOS Release 8 and you're going to ZOS Release 9, you'd go to the extract file for the ZOS Version 1 Release 8 ZOS Gen PSP bucket. You'd pull that extract file, and then in that ZOS V1R8 PSP bucket would be listed all of the PTFs that you'd need to coexist with Release 9. So the important thing here is to pull the coexistence extract file where you're coming from, and that will tell you what you need to do when you're going to ZOS Release 9. I've put the URL on this slide here on where you can get the tool if you need it. If you already have the tool and it's running fine for you, you don't need to upgrade the tool. You just need to go get the extract file. As PTFs, as coexistence PTFs, are found late-breaking PTFs, they will be put into that PSP bucket, so periodically you may want to pull that extract file and run it again to make sure that you do have the latest identified coexistence PTFs on your system. Okay, slide number 21. We talked a little bit about programmatic coexistence verification, and we have another tool that's available to you out on the web, the IBM Migration Checker for ZOS. We knew that there were some common migration problems today. We have a lot of migration actions in the book. We don't have a lot of programmatic assistance available for it. So we wrote an as-is tool that was available on the ZOS download website. We introduced it for ZOS Release 8, and then we enhanced it more for ZOS Release 9. We've got approximately 30 programs out there where you can run the tool against your current system, and it can tell you what migration actions are going to be appropriate for you to do. It's a very safe tool to run. It makes no changes at all on your system. All it does is give you a report on migration actions that you're okay for or ones that you have an exception for and that you're going to have to accommodate. You can rerun it as many times as you want on your existing system, and even after you've migrated to Release 9, you can run the tool again, and it will tell you if you've performed the migration action correctly. So in my presentation, I have a little black box with a red check, meaning that the Migration Checker tool can help you with that specific migration action. So you may want to try it. We've had a lot of people download it, and they said that they've liked it, and it's great for Release 9. Okay, so let's talk about some migration actions for elements on slide 22. First of all, the ZOS Release 9 migration book has been updated on January 31st, 2008, fairly recently, and we've added some migration actions that we were missing in there before. So I would recommend that if you haven't looked at the latest level of the book, to go out and pull that latest level of the book. It did have some more migration actions added and some more customer feedback incorporated, so I think we've got a good refreshed book out there. There is a customized book for you if you're just coming from Release 8 to Release 9 so that you don't need to see all the Release 8 stuff that you'd already done before. So use the customized book and use the refresh book. When you're coming from Release 8 to Release 9, the elements that you see listed here are the ones that have new migration actions. And I'm not going to have enough time to talk about all of them and even all the migration actions for a particular element. So what I've done is I've just selected a couple of elements to talk about. So let's move on to slide number 23. I just wanted to level set on what a migration action is first. A migration action is just the things you need to do in order to get your existing workload running on the new level of the system. Okay? It has the notion of system equivalence, so it's just using what you used before and identifying things that you need to do in order to have it behave as similarly as you did before. It doesn't include exploitation of brand new functions, and Geta did a great job at explaining some of the great new functions that are in Release 9, so I'm just going to talk about the migration that you need to do to stabilize the release so that you can be best positioned in order to exploit new stuff after you've completed your migration. Migration actions can be required. They can be required if you only meet a certain condition, or they can just be recommended because they might be required in the future, or it might be a good practice, or it resolves some sort of a problem. And then we've timed the migration action on when you can do it. I would recommend that any migration action that you can do right now that you do right now, because that will leave you fewer things that you need to do in the future when you have migrated to Release 9. Moving to slide number 24, we'll talk about some general migration actions. We have removed data sets in ZOS Release 9. We remove data sets every release, and you can see that from the application suite for communication server, we've removed some data sets that or SAPP that might have affected you, and also some ones for the OCSS element we've removed. So those are obsolete data sets. And also we've had new functions added in ZOS Release 9, and these new functions have added new data sets. In Release 9, we have new SystemRex data sets, and probably the most important one you'll see is the SAXREXEC data set, the location where your SystemRex execs would live. So you'll want to pay attention to the SAXR data sets and the associated DLIVs coming with SystemRex in ZOS Release 9. We've got new libraries for the Metal C runtime, new libraries for PKI, SDSF, BCP, capacity provisioning, and also for crypto. Also, we've incorporated into ZOS Release 9 the alternate library for Rex, which is a very convenient function we finally introduced with ZOS Release 9. This probably is not a new function for you. You've probably already had the alternate library for Rex. However, now in ZOS, we've incorporated this function, and these data sets are now new to the ZOS product itself. So you'll need to accommodate that we have the new Rex data sets for the alternate library in ZOS Release 9. Also, we like to look at how many new address spaces we've got coming in. In ZOS Release 9, we have a new address space for SysRex, AXR. That's an address space that will be automatically started, and you can manually restart it. That may require some security setup for you in order to get that initialized correctly. Also in ZOS Release 9, CEA, Common Event Adapter. This is a new address space that will deliver ZOS events to C language clients, such as the ZOS SIM server. It's automatically started at IPL, and it does not terminate. Also in ZOS Release 9, we have some several DFSMS DSS address spaces that will be started automatically by HSM whenever you invoke various functions. In Release 8, we have a DSS address space that will help recover up to 64 data sets concurrently from one or more copy pull backup versions. So you may see that in ZOS Release 8. Okay, moving on to slide number 25. We always like to look at the new scope equal common data spaces in the maxcad setting that you may have in your IA sys. This is a very important setting in your ParmLib because if it's not set correctly, it may cause you to re-IPL. We do have one more data space used by CEA, the Common Event Adapter, and so you'll need to make sure that your maxcad setting can allow for one additional data space. I would strongly recommend that you use the health checker check to help you verify that your maxcad setting is appropriate for your system. Moving on to slide number 26, into the BCP. We have changed, we've talked about this for a while, and in the DIAG XX parameter, our PharmLab member, we've had the allow user key CSA option. In ZOS Release 8, the default value was yes, meaning that you could have user key CSA. However, in ZOS Release 9, we've changed the default to no. This is a good default to use, and we would encourage you to use no if you can. However, it does investigate that you look at any software that you have because you may need to change it back to the old default of yes. So a little bit of investigating here. Try to keep the default to no as of ZOS Release 9, but you may need to change it back to the old default of yes. On slide number 27, I'd mentioned before that one by console IDs had been completely removed in ZOS Release 8, and in fact, there was a lot of console work that was done in ZOS Release 8. The console ID tracking facility is still incorporated into ZOS Release 9, and I would encourage you to use it and still monitor one by console ID usage. Also, there's been a new routing attribute in ZOS Release 8 added, UNKNIDS, unknown IDs, and you may want to consider adding that routing attribute to a console because any console that had that routing attribute would receive messages directed to 1-byte console IDs. In ZOS Release 8, the removal of the master console has also taken place, and the master console is removed, but the functions that were unique to the master console have been made available to other consoles. So there are some things that you'll need to do to accommodate that. You may want to make some changes in your console PharmLab member and also your console group PharmLab member. However, I would warn you that if you're sharing this console PharmLab member between, let's say, your Release 9 system and your Release 7 system, your Release 7 system still does need those statements in there. The Release 9 system, if it encounters them, it'll just give you a warning and it will continue. However, it's something that you may want to go later on when you don't have any more ZOS Release 7 in your enterprise and go and clean up the console and the console group PharmLab members to make sure that they you can not get that warning anymore. So some commands are no longer supported as of ZOS Release 8, the very MasterCon and the display console master console only command. Also, there is a new routing attribute when the master console was removed, and this new routing attribute is the INTIDS routing attribute, and you may want to assign that routing attribute to a console, and those consoles that had that routing attribute will receive messages directed to console ID0, which used to represent the master console. Now, the last line on this chart is pretty important because a lot of people hit this. In the command PharmLab member, many people had this command here where it had monitor job names, comma, T. That won't work anymore as of ZOS Release 8, and you need to change that to a setcon monitor command instead. The next slide, number 28. This is a very important enhancement that happened in ZOS Release 8, is that ZOS itself will support up to 4 terabytes of real storage on a single ZOS image. Now, understand that the hardware can support up to 4 terabytes, but ZOS itself will. Part of this enhancement meant that we have removed physical swapping of address spaces as of ZOS Release 8. Recall that physical swapping is that process of moving the virtual storage of the address space to auxiliary. So if you don't have the physical swapping anymore, it means that a portion of the address space will remain in real storage. And if you don't have enough real storage, it may have a performance implication and you may see the paging rate increase. So what can you do about this enhancement in the migration action that it caused? First of all, on your system that you have right now, let's say your ZOS Release 7 system, analyze your RMF reports to see if you do a large number of physical swaps. If you look at the RMF StoreF report, that'll show the address space is fixing a lot of frames, and you might want to consider increasing the amount of real storage that you get when you IPL ZOS Release 8 or Release 9 if you see a large number of physical swaps or address spaces fixing a lot of frames. On ZOS Release 8 and Release 9, after you do your migration, use RMF to monitor your use of the real storage by looking at the unreferenced interval count value. Now, these values have changed in ZOS Release 8, and the new maximum of the UIC value is 6535. And it's good to have a higher number here. So if you have a higher number, it means that there's ample frames on your system that you're okay. If you have a low UIC value, it means that the system is storage constrained and you may need to add more real storage. So that's an important enhancement, but it has some migration actions that you need to do to accommodate it. On slide number 29, This is a very important migration action. It's just recommended in ZOS Release 9, but it's going to become a requirement in ZOS Release 10, is if you have any callers of the CNZ MXURF service that don't hold appropriate serialization, they will have problems once after ZOS Release 9. So you need to detect those users now and correct them. This is great because you can also use the console tracking facility not only to detect one-byte console ID uses, but you can also detect users that don't hold this appropriate serialization right now. So turn on the tracking facility, detect this inappropriate serialization, and in order to know which ones are the one-byte console IDs versus which ones are the serialization problems within the tracking facility, look for UCME-CMS in the instance string of the problem, and then you'll know that those are the serialization programs that you need to correct. And again, this is very important to turn on now and monitor this now, because after ZOS Release 9, it will be a requirement. Okay, moving on to slide number 30. A couple of ISPF ones that I think you might be important to you. First of all, prior to ZOS Release 9, ISPF shipped two versions of the primary panel. It shipped ISR App Prime and ISR App 390. The difference between these two primary panels is that the ISR App 390 had two additional options that the ISR Prime didn't. One of them was for ZOS SysProg applications, and the other one was for ZOS user applications. As of ZOS Release 9, ISPF is only shipping one primary panel. It's the ISR App Prime one, and the two additional options that it had that were on the ISR App 390 have been added to the ISR App Prime. So just be aware of that if that affects you. I've heard from some people that actually does affect them, so you might want to keep an eye on that one. Also, a great enhancement that came in ISPF Release 9 is that in ISPF on certain options on the panel, you can actually put a Unix path name or an MVS dataset name, and this is really nice because you don't have to context switch out into a different panel just to type Unix type of information, and you can either put Unix or MVS dataset kind of information in the same field on the ISPF panels and some of the panels. This is great, but it also affects now existing dataset exit allocations that you might have for ISPF. Because if you have any of these exit routines, the exit routines will need to be aware that they might receive a pointer to an SVC 99 parameter list containing new keys used to allocate a Unix file to a DD, whereas before it wasn't that wasn't available to them. So take a look if you have any dataset allocation exit routines to see if this enhancement will affect you. Okay, moving on to slide number 31. The very important VSAM dataset attribute removal that will be coming in a future release. Right now it's just recommended. We haven't announced when this is going to be removed. What I would do is there's a tool out there that you can download, and you can find it in your handout, and you can run it against VSAM clusters, and it will check whether it has embed replicator key range defined with them, and then you can schedule a time for those datasets that are affected. I know a lot of system programmers have told me that a lot of their MasterCat and UserCats have been affected by this. You really need to be aware of this and plan a time when you can redefine them without those attributes anymore. Now, an important update to the statement of direction is that we've said that when the support for embed and replicate is removed in some future release, if you had migrated off or dumped any datasets that had that attributes in it, when the dataset has been recalled or restored, those attributes will be automatically removed and put in a usable state. That's a very good statement to make because it means anything that you've dumped or migrated off will be recalled and usable for you on that future release when we remove the support. If you do use DFSMS RMM, you need to make sure that you have a control dataset ID defined. It's been a recommendation for quite a while. But as of ZOS Release 9, if you don't have a control dataset ID defined, DFSMS RMM will not start. So this is very important, something that you can do right now. It's a requirement as of ZOS Release 9. Okay, slide number 32. This migration action that you see here actually has a little bit of history, but it has a good ending. Back before ZOS Release 8, you could allocate an SMS-managed partition organized data set to a data class attribute that had a dynamic volume count of greater than 1. Well, in ZOS Release 8 and Release 9, we had a restriction where the dynamic volume count could not be greater than 1. This affected a lot of people. So we issued an APAR, OA22738, to bring it back to that pre-release 8 behavior, which is what people really wanted. Okay. So the important thing for this migration action is to make sure that you have OA22738 on, because then you don't have any behavior changes. By the way, this history of this migration action, it was not applicable to non-SMS managed data sets, because the volume count attribute was only applicable into SMS managed data sets. So the big thing here is just get the APAR on, and then you don't really have any migration work to do. On slide number 33, if you use DFSMS HSM fast replication support, you will need to define some new profile. The profile names for HSM fast replication commands have shortened, and you need to define the new profile names, or if you don't, the commands will fail on ZOS release 8 or release 9. This migration action means that you'll have to define the new profiles with the shorter names. That's fine. But there's a coexistence consideration for this also. In mixed releases of the HSM Plex, the older releases will use the older profile names, and the release 8 and release 9 systems, or release 8 and higher systems, will use the newer names. So you don't want to clean up the old profile names until you've migrated off of ZOS release 7. Then you can clean up the older profile names. On slide number 34, prior to ZOS release 9, if you took a vSAM RLS app and dump, it was taken only on the originating system. However, sometimes information really was needed from other systems in the Sysplex. So as of ZOS release 9, there'll be Sysplex-wide dumping support, which may cause other systems running vSAM RLS to take dumps as well as the originating system. So you might want to look and see if you need more dump space on any given system, because if you have dump space that's currently limited. By the way, these dumps, you can use DAE to suppress if you wanted to. On ZOS release 8, we issued the support to dump to tape copy pool versions residing on VASD. When you did use this, the enhancement changed HSM control records the first time you issued a fast replication backup command against a copy pool on release 8. So you issued that command on ZOS release 8, it would change the HSM control data set records, and then from then on, with those changed control data set records, the only fast replication that you could successfully issue from a prior system, a ZOS release 7 system, is the fast replication recover from DASD command. So make sure that if you issue the command, the fast replication backup command, against a copy pool on release 8 or release 9, that you are aware that the control data set records will be updated, and then you have a restriction now on what commands you can issue on your ZOS release 7 system. So a very important coexistence consideration for that migration action. Okay, moving to slide number 35. I'd mentioned before, stop using multi-file system aggregates because you won't be able to mount them in ZOS release 8. But in general, look and see if you have any multi-file system aggregates and convert them to compatibility mode aggregates. At the bottom of the page, you'll know that we have a new ZFS directory buffer cache default change in ZOS release 9. The old directory cache size option, the old size was 2 meg, and the new default is 32 meg, which we feel is a much more appropriate default. As of ZOS release 8, if you wanted to stop the ZOS physical file system, there's a new OMVS stop PFS command, and you need to use that instead of the stop ZFS command. If you do try to issue the stop ZFS command as of ZOS release 8, it won't work because that command's been removed. Moving on to slide number 36. It's always important to look at the LE runtime changes that have happened, and we have a new option in ZOS release 9, CEE dump. This is a newly added option. However, note that it doesn't change any default behavior. This newly added option and its defaults are the same behavior that we had prior. However, it's a new option added to runtimes to give you control over it. But if you just take the defaults, you won't see any difference on your system. On ZOS release 8, we had dyn dump. That was a new option that was added that I'll talk about in just a second. But besides the new option CEE dump in release 9 and the new release 8 dyn dump, there were no other sub-options added to other options, and there were no default changes made. I'd like to encourage everyone, if you're using the release 7 enhancement for putting your runtime options for LE in the CEE PARM Live member, and these new options and their defaults are appropriate for you, there is no migration action that you need to do. However, if you're still using the old assembler language modules to specify the runtime options, you will need to accommodate the new app options that I've just mentioned. So I would strongly encourage you to use the new PARM Live option that was introduced in Release 7, and that might help your migrations in the future. Moving to slide number 37, let's talk a little bit more about the Dyn-Dump runtime option or dynamic dump. This new option adds the ability to get an IPCS-readable dump automatically, and this will really help with first failure data capture. Now, these dumps will not be produced in a U4039 ABIN. However, it will be applicable to other U40 ABINs. So you may notice that you get more dumps taken if you need it, but I think that's good because this is a serviceability item that really improves the usefulness of ZOS Release 9. You can turn this off if you find that you don't want it. You can specify no T-dump, whereas T-dump is the default, and you will get the dumps. And you can also change the high-level qualifier for where the dump will be written if you wanted to adjust that also. I've talked with a lot of language environment folks, and people are keeping this option turned on. It's really helped with first failure data capture, and it's really helping the serviceability of language environments, so you may want to consider leaving it on. Okay, let's move to slide number 38. A real quick item, TSO. I had mentioned that we added the alternate library for Rex in ZOS Release 9. In TSO had a default for the compiler programming table where it didn't specify some of the values that were provided in the Rex alternate library, but now that we're providing it in ZOS Release 9, we thought it was high time to change the TSO default. So the TSO default for the compiler programming table has been updated. It's not empty anymore, and it contains the value for the alternate library for Rex. You'll see those values in your handout. Those are a very good default, and we recommend that you use that. And we think that this will actually eliminate a migration action, because if you had a user mod to override the TSO default for IRX CMPTM, you don't need to use that anymore. TSO provides a very usable default, which is good. Or if you didn't have a user mod and you put the SEAG alt data set in the LPA list to be found before the TSO module in the link list, you may not need to do that anymore either. So be aware that the TSO default changed for the compiler programming table, and this may help you remove a migration action in the future, which is good. For slide number 39, Unix. In general, it's good to migrate from an HFS to a ZFS, and if you're installing ZOS Release 9, a great time to move to ZFS is when you're laying down your Release 9 server pack. You can do that in ZOS Release 9 server pack. Server pack does support that. By default in server pack, though, if you don't change the file system types from HFS to ZFS, you will get HFS. So decide if you want to move to ZFS with your ZOS Release 9 system, and you can do that easily in server pack. Also, there's a handy tool called BPXWH2Z if you need to move other file systems from an HFS to a ZFS. It's been available since ZOS Release 7, and that's a very good tool for migrating many file systems from HFS to ZFS. We have not announced the removal of support for the HFS file system, so this just remains a recommended migration action. Another default change that happened in ZOS Release 9 was the AutoMount Delay keyword default. It used to be 0. And in ZOS Release 9, it has been changed to 10 minutes. This new default is considered a best practice, and so Unix has followed up this default change with a health check called USS Auto Delay, and it will check that you're using the new default, which is the best practice. So this is really good. I really admire Unix for doing this. They changed the default that was a bad default into a best practice default, which was a good default, and then they're following it up with a health check to programmatically check that you're using that new default. I think that's a great idea. Also, if in your BPX-PRM PonLive member, if you have more than 50 make directory keywords specified, you're only going to be limited to 50 as of ZOS Release 9. So you may want to look at your BPX-PonLive member now, make sure you don't have more than 50 mictors on the root or mount statements, and if you have more than 50, limit it just to 50. I think no one probably is using more than 50, but take a look at it because you'd get syntax errors if you tried. On slide number 40. Prior to ZOS Release 9, the system dumps didn't include dumps from an active ZFS address space, and it was a good idea to actually start including this information given that a lot of people are using ZFS file systems now. So as of ZOS Release 9, system dumps can capture data from an active ZFS address space, so you may need to increase your dump data set size to include this additional information from ZFS address space. And I don't know how much extra space you're going to need in your dump data set. That really depends on the amount of ZFS activity on your sister and your configuration parameters, but it's something that you'll want to take a look at. Another default change in Unix is the max file proc. Prior to ZOS Release 8, the default was 256, and the new default in Release 9 is considerably larger at 64,000. And again, I like Unix when they change the default from what was not such a usable default into a very good best practice default, 64,000. They also backed it up with a health check, USS Max Sockets Max File Proc. So use the new default there for Max File Proc. Okay, slide number 41. I just wanted to put together on a single file, if you're coming from ZOS Release 7 to Release 9, all the fire items that I talked about, the one byte console ID, support removal, the very important removing your IBM Open Class Library runtime support, use that tool that you'll find in your handout and verify your usage now. Hopefully you won't have any programs that are using it and you'll be totally clean when you get to ZOS Release 9. Separate out your Telnet server functions from your TCP/IP stack and run that in a separate address space. You have to do that before you get to Release 9 or you'll lose Telnet functions. I'd mentioned a little bit before about the coexistence consideration for the HSM fast replication command coexistence consideration, so think about that. Now, I didn't have time to talk about JES 2, and I know that in ZOS Release 7 JES 2, there were a lot of exit changes that slowed migrations a little bit to ZOS Release 7, and I've listed it here. Because I didn't have time to talk about JES 2, there are some exit changes that are needed for ZOS Release 9 in JES 2. However, they're a lot less than they were in Release 7. Affected exits are 8, 31, 42, and 45, and any exits that you have that are using the GCT ID. And so you can read the migration book about that. I've listed it here just because it's a consideration, and it's something I've become sensitive to about when JES exits change, and I wanted to put that in front of you and have you notice that, but they're a lot less than changed in ZOS Release 7. So I don't think that's really a true fire item, but I listed it here just so that you can, don't forget to look in the migration book about that. On slide number 42, after you get to ZOS Release 9, we'll have some future big MIGs, some future big migration actions that you can actually mitigate now. The vSAM one, use that embed ship tool and really use the output of it to identify which vSAM clusters you need to redefine. And you can start your conversion from HFS to ZFS and get everything on ZFS if you can. And again, as I mentioned before, ZOS Release 9 Server Pack is a nice time to lay down the ZOS file system as a ZFS instead of an HFS. And then the very important consoles, the CNZ MX URF, if you're using that service and not holding the appropriate serialization, use the console ID tracking facility in order to determine that today, because in ZOS Release 10, you'll have a problem. So that's something that you can mitigate right now with that by using the console ID tracking facility. Slide number 43, we've listed some additional resources for the Z10 Enterprise class capabilities, Hot Topics articles, IBM Education Assistant modules, where the publications can find, where the tool can be found. There's lots of resources that you can use in order to help your migration to ZOS Release 9. Okay, so I'd like to thank you for your attention and go back to the operator.
Thank you so much, Geta and Marna. Now we would like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Now following the survey, we will conduct a live Q&A session with the presenter. You know, your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer today's questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Just listen to all the options before making your selection. For our first question, please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was highly satisfied, press star 1. If it was satisfied, press star 2. If it was somewhat satisfied, press star 3. And if it was dissatisfied, press star 4. We'll pause to assemble the responses. And ladies and gentlemen, for our second question, was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference, if it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. And if it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. And again, we will pause to assemble the responses. Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our survey. We do thank you all for your participation. And now let's move on to taking your questions. To ask your question, simply press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone at any time. Just keep in mind, if you're joining on a speakerphone, to make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that is star 1 for questions. And now I will turn the conference back to our speakers while we wait for your questions.
Thank you, operator. This is Gitta Berg, and many thanks to Marna here. A lot of very good, very important information, and I think you folks on the phone thought so too. The response to this call was overwhelming, and my sincerest apologies for anyone having some long waits getting onto the call. I do want to mention that this call will be available for replay. It will be at the same link you used for registering and accessing this call and the PDF file. So be aware that it will be available for replay. Well, we're at the top of the hour, and I hope you can stay online and as we take some questions. Available with us for question and answers is myself, Marna Wally, and Amy Tabenkin from IBM Systems, the worldwide sales. So, operator, back to you. Do we have any questions?
We certainly do, get it. We'll take our first question from Carolyn Miller with Depository Trust.
We were wondering whether the IOC check tool works with PDFEs.
Hi, Carolyn. This is Marna Wally. I'll take that question. Yes, it does work with PDSEs. It works with PDSs, and it also works in file systems. You can. It works very well with all of them, actually. I've tested with them all.
We downloaded it in November or October, and actually we just got the opportunity to check it out this week. And we are getting a problem with one of our data sets that's a PDSE, where it says that it couldn't open certain members, and then at the bottom it says that when it indicates on the summary the number of members that were not able to be opened, it says 0.
Okay. If you want to, you can send that information to me, and I can get it to the tool owner, and we can try to find out what's going on. But it is intended to work with PDFE.
Okay. You don't know whether it's been updated since October, November, do you?
I don't believe it has been updated. But
okay,
then again, I have a level of the tool that's been working, so I haven't updated anything since that one. But send it along to me, and I'll get you contacted with the right person. But again, it's supposed to be working on PDFEs, PDFs, and file systems.
Okay. Thanks, Marna.
No problem, Carolyn.
Once again, to our audience, that is star 1 for questions. We'll now hear from Edward Myers with D.C. Government.
Yes, my question is this. You have your ZOSGen extract file. In addition, on your website, you have a lot of extract files for the different program products or the components. Do we have to go through not only ZOSGen, but also the ones for different components, too?
Thanks, Edward. That's a good question. Just for the coexistence verification, the ZOSGen extract file is sufficient, and it's all been consolidated in there. However, for other reasons, for verifying that you have hyper or service recommendation installed on your system, you should be pulling the extract files from the other PSP buckets also. So I'm not sure whether your question was just for coexistence reason or for just general identifying if you have the recommended service on your system. Was it just for coexistence?
Just for coexistence, yeah.
Yeah, no, just for the coexistence, I've consolidated all in the ZOSGen, so just that one-stop shopping place is where you need to go for that.
Gotcha.
Remember to pull the extract file of the release that you're coming from, though. I mean, I
right. You have to put, like, I'm on ZOS 1.7, so I'd pull the ZOS 1.7 extract file.
Absolutely. You wouldn't believe how many people have been pulling the release 9 extract file and thinking
right.
that that's where they are going to find the release 9 coexistence. So
exactly.
If you're on 7 going to 9, it's the ZOS V1R7 ZOSGen extract file. You're exactly
mm-hmm.
right.
Thank you.
And we'll now hear from Peter Brightus with HCSC.
Yes, you breezed through real quick about JES, and I'm concerned, you know, about JES parms and JES exits. We had some issues with that, and we got them resolved, but I just wanted to make sure there wasn't going to be any in 1-9, because we have the exits written up for 1-7 right now. We wanted to test them on 1-9. I just wanted to know if I'm going to see any issues on that.
Peter, this is Marta again. That's a really good question. As everybody knows, the exit changes that happened in 7 could have been quite extensive. I did have not a lot of time to talk about JES exits when you're migrating from 7 and 9, but to tell you the truth, there weren't that many changes. Yes, there are changes to JES 2 exit routines between 7 and 9. It affects exit 8, 31, 42, 45, and also if you have any exits that examine the $JCT because a field name has changed in there too. So it's possible that you have exit changes that, again, you need to do between coming from 7 to 9. However, it won't nearly be as extensive as it was to get to 7, and I found that even a lot of people didn't have to do any changes to get from 7 to 9. So it's definitely not as large a concern as it was in the past.
So I'll find these problems when I assemble the exits, right?
Find the problem on any exit routine that examines the $JCT where the filed ID had changed. You will see an assembly error on that particular one. You do need to read in the migration book about exit 8, 31, 42, and 45 to see if you have to change anything. Those won't necessarily result in assembler errors.
Okay, thank you.
Do you use 8, 31, 42, or 45?
No, we don't.
And then the only one that you need to concern about is any of your exits that examine a certain field in the $JCT, and those you'll see assembly errors on. So just an assembly error should be okay, whether you're thumbs up or thumbs down to get in a 9.
Thank you.
No problem.
Yeah, bye.
Our next question will come from Nicholas Pinpost with IBM.
Yes, my question is this one. Is going to be incremented the JQES from JES 2 PARM? Today maximum is about 200,000.
Hi, Nicholas. This is Marna. I'm not really familiar with the statement that you're referring to, so I'm not sure I have an answer for you on that one. I'll need to get back to you on that one.
Yes, it's the queue for the output in the spool. I want to know if it's going to be incremented.
I'm not familiar with that particular area, so what we'll have to do is I'll have to take that one offline with you.
Yeah, we'll get you to the right people on that one.
Okay, thanks. Okay.
Directly to Marna. Yeah.
Okay, sorry about that. Yeah, I haven't heard anything specifically about that, but I think it's important to look to see if there was a change in that area, so we'll check on that.
We'll now hear from Michael Tompkins with Chrysler.
Hi, Marna. We run the Mod 27 as our res pack, and we have our root file system as an HFS read-only on the res pack. So we're quite concerned about having to go to a ZFS since that's a linear vSAM cluster, and having vSAM on the res pack when you clone res packs enters all kinds of nasty things with BBDS names and such. Is there any guidance available?
Michael, that's a really good question, and it's good that you're looking at that now, because just converting from HFS to ZFS, a lot of people were kind of, I guess, how could you nicely say, noticing that it was a vSAM data set, and their policy was not to put vSAM data sets on the SysRes. So it is very important to understand ahead of time that a ZFS data set is a vSAM linear data set. What we have seen people doing, and what I might recommend that you might consider doing, is consider moving the file system onto a separate volume where you can have the VVDS and have vSAM data sets, and that would, of course, affect your cloning procedures, and so that may actually mean that it lengthens times for you to get to a ZFS. So eventually, I think you need to get to a ZFS. However, you need to decide where you're going to place that ZFS file system when you do that. If you put it on your Mod 27, where you have your PDSs and PDSEs for your SysRes, or you have just another overflow that just is for file system, really it's how you want to handle that within your own shop. But do understand, you know, you'll have different cloning procedures because it is a vSAM linear data set, whereas HFS wasn't.
Thank you.
Very good to look at that with open eyes before you go to it. Good point.
We'll hear again from Carolyn Miller with Depository Trust.
Yes, we were wondering, we're in ZOS version 1, release 8, and we are ordering 1.9 next week. Are there any migration considerations that we should really be, I mean, we're going to look at them, but that we should really be very sensitive to going from a 1.8 environment to 1.9?
Hi, Carolyn. This is Mara. I know this call was kind of geared towards 7 to 9, but a lot of the things that I talked about for the migration actions were coming also from 8 into 9 and the changes that were introduced actually in Release 9. What I would do if I were you is there's a customized version of the migration book just for users that are coming from 8 to 9, so you don't have to see everything that you've already gone through when you got to 8. It's a smaller book than the Release 7 to Release 9 migration book. What I would do is I'd pull that customized book and look through that. Mainly the big migration actions that I have talked about at this teleconference, you know, those would include those changes that happened in Release 9.
Okay. All right. Yeah, we have the migration actions for 1.8 going to 1.9. It doesn't seem to be overwhelming.
Yeah. No, it really isn't that bad. We've had a lot of smooth migrations coming from 8 to 9 and actually coming from 7 to 9. So, I mean, personally, I can say that I think the 7 to 9 or 8 to 9 has been a lot less problematic than 4 to 7, where back on ZOS Release 4 to Release 7, we had quite a few major changes that happened, you know, and I'm thinking of those JOS2Xs was one of them.
So that was the big thing for us in 1.7. We actually had our whole department participating in removing just two exits where we could remove them, so.
Exactly, and what I'm seeing now is coming from 7 to 9, we really don't have any of the considerations that are of that size at all coming from 7 to 9. We've had a lot of people do it smoothly with a lot less effort than it took to get from 4 to 7.
Well, thanks a lot, Marna.
Okay, thanks, Carolyn.
We'll take a follow-up from Edward Myers with DC Government.
Yeah, I actually have two questions for you this time. The first question on your Zoster and extract file, has that been up? When is the latest time that's been updated? And the second question involves ShopZ, because I've seen they've had bad experience with it when trying to order ZOS upgrades, including 1.7 and maybe going to 1.9. Is that when you go to ShopZ, you do your order and even you request some additional free components that you can get, it always tells you, no, you can't do it, call your rep. Has that been taken care of or cleaned up anymore?
Okay, well, I'll take your first one first about the extract file. The last time I updated the extract file for the coexistence ones, this is about coexistence again, right?
Correct, yes.
I believe it was about a month ago.
Okay.
Okay, so that stabilized, really, the amount of Release 9 coexistence that we've identified. We haven't had any late-breaking news in that in quite a while, so I believe it's about a month old. But you can go and take a look out there. Actually, if you look at the PSP bucket, the extract file, it will say in the date at the beginning what day it was updated. And if you look at the one from today, you can see how long it's been without any changes. I believe it's probably close to 3, 4, 5 weeks now without any changes.
Yeah, I downloaded it on 3.14, so I should still be good then.
Yes, yeah, yeah. I haven't done anything since then. So that one's still good. You're still okay. But, I mean, I would like to note, generally, you might want to pull it once every couple of months to see if there's any added because, you know, we are discovering sometimes.
Right, understand.
So you're fine for now. Now, the ShopZ one's a little more complicated. I would recommend, are you uploading your inventory into ShopZ and allowing it to pre-prime your ordering checklist with what you already have on your system?
Yep.
Okay, so that's a good help. That'll help you do it. We do have, as you've noted, some problems where, I don't know if they're exactly problems or it's almost like way of life, for some of the products that have no price associated with them, you still need to be entitled in order to order them. And so you will still have to go through an entitlement process in order to get them if they're not
right.
Customer profile. That's really just the way that it is, and there hasn't been any enhancements in that area, although we do know that there are plenty of opportunities for enhancements there.
Right.
So, yes, you know, you might want to allow yourself a little bit of extra time to make sure that you've got that entitlement stuff worked out. If you've already been through it and you're entitled to the program number, you shouldn't have any problems ordering that same program number again, though.
Right.
I would like to encourage you, if you are using ShopZ series, to do an electronic deliverable for Zero.
Oh, yeah.
Are you going to do that?
Yeah, but it turns out we go through the whole process and end up having to order it from a rep anyway and get the tapes. So, yeah, I've been through that whole thing. We use it electronically, but, you know, what can I say?
I would encourage you to have your IBM rep order it electronically for you. It really is makes life a lot easier.
I understand. Oh, yeah.
And if your IBM rep needs help doing that, they can contact me.
Okay.
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Great. You're welcome.
We'll now hear from Chris Steffens with Wells Fargo Finance.
Hi. I was wondering, and I apologize if this is a stupid question, but how do I produce this extract file. I'm actually in the PSP bucket that you mentioned, and then I was wondering, like if I max down the bottom, is there supposed to be an extract tab somewhere?
Oh, no, this is a good question. It's not a stupid question at all. First of all, you need to download the EPSP tool, okay?
So yeah.
You've got the tool up on your ZOS host system.
Yep.
Extract file actually is created every night from the PSP bucket that's out there when something has changed in the PSP bucket. So all you need to do is, you don't generate the extract file. We've already generated it for you. All you need to do is download it to your system and then upload it to ZOS. Or if you're like me, I use SMB and I move it directly to ZOS that way so I don't have the middleman involved. But just use that extract file that you've downloaded, upload it to ZOS, and then run it against that tool.
Yeah, but where do I find that extract file again? I'm sorry.
Inside the presentation, there's a link for the PSP bucket, and when you find the bucket, there'll be two things. One of it will just be the straight text of the bucket, and the other thing, it will say extract file. And then you can click on extract file and then do like a page save as if you want, or, you know, however from your browser, how you prefer to ever copy a file from your browser.
Okay.
Yeah, it shouldn't be that hard to do. I mean, once you've found where the extract file is, like if you do a search on ZOS V1R7 with ZOS Gen PSP bucket, two things should hit. One is the text of the bucket, and the other one is the extract file for the bucket. So just make sure you click on the extract. Also, by the way, if you happen to click on the wrong one and you get to the text of the bucket, right at the very top of the web page, it will give you a link directly to the extract file that comes out of that bucket, too.
Huh. I'm not seeing all that.
Okay. Well, try using the URL that's in the presentation. If you still have problems, let me know.
Sure. Thank you.
It's not hard, really. It's just a matter of knowing where to look, especially
yeah.
if you haven't gone through it before.
Well, Geta, Marna, and Amy, we have no further questions, so I'll turn it back to you for closing or additional remarks.
Okay, folks, thank you very much for your interest in ZOS version 1 release 9, and thank you for staying with us for the duration and even then some. From myself, Marna, and Amy Tabenkin, take care and have a great day and have a great migration.
Thank you, Geta. Well, ladies and gentlemen, again, that does conclude our conference for today. On behalf of IBM, I would like to thank you for your participation. Enjoy the rest of your day.